Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for those news updates. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. Thank you to Dudu Ramelo for standing in for me last week as we closed out the week. But we kick off a new week, and we kick off today, the 28th of October, with events that took place in 1492 on this day. Christopher Columbus would sight Cuba and claim it on behalf of Spain, calling it Juana. Didn't know people could just claim things. In 1918, on this day, Czechoslovakia would gain independence after Austria and Hungary decided they would no longer want to be friends, and that breakup resulted in the Republic of Czechoslovakia being established. In 1936, on this day, the 50th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty would be celebrated, with the statue being rededicated by the president at the time, Franklin Roosevelt. In 1954, on this day, Ernest Hemingway would win a Nobel Prize for Literature. In 1961, on this day, Walter Sisulu and others would be arrested for partying on this day. And in 2018, on this day, Lewis Hamilton would take his fifth driver's title, despite finishing fourth in the race. But most memorably, on this day last year, I discovered I had heart rate issues watching the Springboks win the World Cup by 1 point. Anyone that's forgotten that, yes, we are still four-time champions. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we take a look at the developments from Dis-Chem and Pick n Pay. On Friday, Dis-Chem gave us their half-year update for the first half of their financial year. Today, we got an update from Pick n Pay. We're going to be looking at both of those companies with each company's respective CEO. Then we've got a conversation with the deputy CEO at the Standard Bank Group around the South Africa Tomorrow conference that's kicked off in the US today. He'll be joining us live from New York to try and understand the purpose of this conference and this gathering and what it aims to achieve. Then, because it's Monday, we've got personal finance on a Monday. We're going to wrap things up with a look at credit card dependency, how to avoid it, and how to get your credit card to work for you.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick things off with how the markets have been performing. Markets have started off the week on a positive note, but there is a slew of data that will be following through this week and next week, and we're going to take a look at some of those data points and try and see how that could potentially affect the markets. I'm joined on the line by Director and Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss, Gary Boyson, to take a look at this and try and see if we can understand it. Good evening, Gary. Lovely to speak to you as always. Big week ahead this week, but undoubtedly next week is going to be even bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. So the market seems to be taking it in its stride with the All Share Index finishing up just over 0.7%. But as you say, a lot of risk events coming up. So on the one hand, we've got the U.S. Tech shares reporting this week of the Magnificent Seven. I think we have five of them reporting. So it's going to be absolutely key to watch that. As you said, a slew of economic data, everything from U.S. GDP on Wednesday to the labor data, the non-farm payrolls numbers on Friday. Then, of course, we have local. We've got the South African mini budget on Wednesday, if that wasn't enough for you. And then, of course, to top it all off, next Tuesday, the US heads to the polls, and we're going to see eventually the results of whether it will be a Trump or a Harris administration.
These next 7 days are going to be critical, and in between those 7 days, we've got jobs numbers out of the US as well. You mentioned that we've got earnings numbers. We're in the middle of earnings season. What are the data points that are taking priority for you, Gary? I mean, looking at the fact that we've kind of dealt with the interest rate conversation in part, we are still in the midst of that. But what are the key things that you'll be looking at as the US earnings numbers come out and as we get other data points?
I think it's going to be very difficult to isolate what's happening. I think anyone that's a trader or an investor should just strap in for the next 2 weeks and expect a lot of volatility. And it could be really coming from anywhere. Anything that surprises or disappoints is going to move markets. I think you're going to see it in our local currency as well. Rand dollar at the moment is fairly stable around 17.70, but that can change at a moment's notice. So I think definitely the mini budget is going to be very interesting domestically. I think think South Africa is going to be in a much better position than we were last time around. And I think the outlook is going to be quite positive. Obviously, we've seen political stability, we've seen load shedding, we're expecting higher tax revenue. We might even see a change to the inflation targeting framework, which I think will be very interesting. As you said, the US interest rates, I think, are largely priced in at this stage. So we've got the FOMC meeting on the 7th. So as we start to collect the data from the US election, we're also going to have what looks like a foregone conclusion in a 25 basis point rate cut from the Fed. That's pricing at a 96% probability. So yes, the data points like the non-farm payrolls figure could move that. The expectation is very low on Friday. We're expecting 123,000 jobs to be added and unemployment to stay stable at 4.1%. But you'll remember last month we had a bumper jobs report and it really changed the outlook for interest rates. So it is always going to be key. But at this stage, the market's saying we know what's going to happen. Of course, there can always be surprises. And then I think what really is going to take a lot of my time this week is looking through these Mag 7 earnings. I think that is going to be absolutely fascinating and it's going to set the tone for markets into the end of the year. There's almost no question about that. So we've got the likes of AMD and Visa reporting, but tomorrow we'll also have Google. We've got Meta reporting on Wednesday, along with Microsoft. On Thursday, we've got Apple and Amazon. And most of them, what you're really looking for is two things. And they both kind of relate to their AI. One, can they monetize AI? And two, how much are they spending on AI? And I think that really is going to determine it. Amazon may be a little bit extra. We're going to see if this really robust US economy that certainly the GDP numbers from Wednesday are predicting are feeding through to the US consumer. I would assume it is. But yes, those underlying company earnings are really going to set the tone for the US markets going forwards and by extension, the South African markets as well.
Gary, as you say, the AI conversation being a focal point on those earnings numbers, I can't help but wonder when we start to see those numbers, if the AI budgets are projected to grow and companies are suddenly even more bullish on AI, we could potentially be in for another run on Nvidia, because that seems to be what happens. And then we've got that to deal with as well. But let's look at the Rand for a second. I want to look at it domestically and internationally, because there are a couple of factors at play at the moment, and the Rand has been trading in that tight range, not sort of going above 1780, but also not really coming below 1760. 20 cents might not seem like a tight range, but for the Rand, that can be a very tight range with everything that's coming out. Are we kind of going to be consolidating in this space at least until next week? Because I don't see any real big catalysts, including the MTBPS, moving the Rand too much unless those US elections start to get very surprising.
Yeah, I think that surprising is the word. So anything that surprises here can move it. So if I had to bet, I would say we're going to see volatility return to the local units this week, because there's just so much that can shock investors. And I think, maybe we'll take it in our stride because we know what kind of week it's going to be. But, looking at it, we're expecting a very, very positive mini budget. We're looking at it. Yes, our debt to GDP is kind of more towards the 75% rather than the 60%, that our emerging market peers kind of target and where we should be. But there's definitely a sense that things have improved on the ground. And I think that is going to be optimistic. I think the challenge around the mini budget at the moment and what the finance minister is going to have to straddle is the pressure to start spending. South Africa, we have structural issues here, and it's going to be oh so easy to just loosen those purse strings a little bit when you are facing higher tax revenue. That said, there has been comments around a real fiscal consolidation. There has been action around paying down our debt as well. So, if everything goes to plan, hopefully, we might see a little bit of currency strength. We have seen the dollar half of that pair weakening. We've got the dollar index at least strengthening. We've got the dollar index out at about 104 at the moment. And I think a lot of that is also pricing in some of the risk events that are coming up. When investors are nervous, they tend to buy dollars. And we saw that kicking off the 100 levels. So, 4% stronger from kind of the weak point is fairly significant. But as I said, anything can change it. We've got the US GDP. If that misses, it can change it. Non-farm payrolls misses, that'll change it again. So I think if I had to bet on volatility, I would bet on volatility this week.
Well, there is a volatility index that I'm sure people can look into. But again, given the amount of volatility, it might not be such a bad idea to sit on your hands and watch things play out as they should. Gary, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the South African picture. I want to look at some of the updates that we've kind of seen from the South African landscape. We're seeing that commodities, particularly off the back of palladium pricing, not so much platinum pricing. The commodities counters are really in the platinum space and the PGM space, still doing really well. Resource counters not having the best day today, but we're still keeping some of the momentum from last week and from kind of what we've been seeing come back into the market.
Yeah, so you know, looking at it, it's always difficult to break down the commodity basket because there's so much that goes into the underlying commodity stocks. As you said, if you're looking at the likes of the precious metals, I mean, we've seen, you know, significant re-rating, and it's been great. I mean, if you look at the gold price, if you want to call that a commodity, for example, you're kind of touching record highs. I mean, we're at $2,742 an ounce, and with the rand where it is now, I think the rand price of gold is pretty much at record highs at the moment, and that'll buoy the precious metal complex. On the other side of the spectrum, if you look more at the energy basket, we can see that the retaliation that we saw from Israel has been a lot more subdued than people thought it could be. They've avoided directly attacking crude facilities, and on the back of that, we have oil down 5%, very benign for the inflation picture. We've got Brent crude oil trading around $72 a barrel. So things like Sasol maybe not going to shine quite as bright as some of the others. But then, of course, if we are going into a world where, you know, economic activity is picking up, that is generally fairly positive for commodity markets. And again, positive commodity markets are good for the local currency as we are a commodity exporting nation. So, yeah, again, it kind of does add a little bit of a tailwind to your rand dollar trade. But overall, yeah, commodities, there's a lot to play for because, of course, we have the elections. And I think you're going to see very different, I think a very different result. Should it be Harris or should it be Trump? If it is Trump, you know, we know that there are going to be massive increases in tariff barriers. That America will look to be a lot more protectionist. That is going to constrain international trade at the same time. So, defense spending, all sorts of things are going to change underneath that. So, again, commodities are very cyclical. They sometimes and also incredibly volatile. So, I hope it continues for South Africa's sake. I hope we see higher commodity prices, certainly in the base metals that we export. But yeah, just be careful out there.
Gary, do you think we saw a bit of portfolio adjustment and repositioning sort of September, early October? Because when you and I caught up at that time, there was a lot of almost markets going one direction. Nothing really made sense. But as you're saying, all of these events that are now so tightly packed into the end of the year, it's starting to look more and more like some investors anticipated that this might be a potential outcome. And so they prepared ahead of time.
There's no question. We've had an incredible run, both on the local markets and international markets this year. So, just chatting to clients, we're definitely feeling kind of the circumspect nature of the conversations. People are a little bit cautious. Everyone's kind of looking forward to that Santa rally, hoping that things will push harder into the end of the year. And at this stage, there's no indication that it won't. We've got a solid momentum behind us in the domestic market. There are a lot of very good news factors playing in our favor. And I don't think we can underestimate the impact of stable energy in South Africa. And we've seen in a lot of the local results as well that, the outlooks have been improving, but the underlying numbers haven't yet caught up. So, management teams saying things are much better on the ground and a lot of optimism returning, a lot of investment spending coming back. But not seeing it in the underlying numbers. When those numbers start to feed through, it could be quite easily be a catalyst to propel markets higher. So for now, everything looks pretty good. But as I said, we don't know what the surprises are going to be. It's those unknown unknowns that we've got to worry about. But for now, I think if you're invested, you stay invested. And let's hope we have a good final 2 months of 2024.
We don't know what to expect, but it's definitely going to be an interesting ride. We'll stick around for it. We'll see how it shapes up, but we'll definitely keep an eye on it. Thanks so much, Gary, for the time and for the insights. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager and Director at Rand Swiss, on the market movements, the big weeks that we have coming up, and how we can best prepare for them.
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster. Or you could stop scrolling on the internet. Just think of all the hours you'll save. Now what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. It can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do, even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The Johannesburg Stock Exchange, in collaboration with the Standard Bank Group, have initiated what they're calling the SA Tomorrow Conference. The conference is currently taking place over the next 2 days, today and tomorrow, in the United States in New York. We are going to be chatting to the Deputy Group Chief Executive of the Standard Bank Group, that's Kenny Fihla, to try and understand what's happening with this particular conference, what its aims are and what its objectives are. Good evening, Kenny. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with the purpose of this particular initiative. I mean, we've seen many kinds of investment drives taking place, driven by the presidency, driven by various stakeholders. Tell us about this one.
Well, thank you very much, Jimmy. The conference has been going on for a number of years now. What it aims to do is the following. Firstly, expose South African companies to U.S. investors so that they're able to access additional pools of capital. Secondly, is to also do the reverse, i.e. expose U.S. investors to opportunities that are presented by South Africa, either directly through the companies that they'll be meeting with, but broadly speaking, through getting a better understanding of South Africa, the dynamics, the developments, as well as the positive things that are usually not recognized or known by international investors. The additional element is also to ensure that we can tap into opportunities that are presented by trade, broadly speaking, between South Africa and the US. And we use the fact that we're here in New York to also meet with other American companies that may be seeking to either import or export into South Africa, and then leverage our role as a financial institution to play that intermediation role of ensuring that trade occurs and can continue to grow over a period of time.
Dr. Fihla, it's certainly a different time for us, understanding that in previous years when this conference would have been organized, South Africa would have been in a very different financial position or fiscal position as well. We've come out of a lot of challenges as a country, but as a globe as well. How much more attractive is South Africa positioned for when we look at other emerging market areas that might also be wanting to attract investment at this point?
I think that's exactly the point, that unless South Africa continues to market itself, to position itself, and to show what progress it is doing in a number of areas, unfortunately, those who are on the front foot would be able to steal the investment opportunity as well as steal access to markets that offer a substantially bigger buying power to their own exports. So this is something that South Africa has to do on an ongoing basis. But with regard to competitiveness, there's no doubt that if one looks at South Africa relative to other emerging markets, that there's a massive competitiveness that South Africa has in terms of just the size of the economy, how diverse it is, the predictability of our justice system, the smoothness with which the sort of government transition took place post our national elections this year. There aren't many countries that can boast all of those things. In addition, there's been a significant improvement with regard to electricity supply. We have not had load shedding since April this year. That's a massive plus. Transnet is on demand. We're starting to see rail volumes increasing. We've got very, very strong institutional capacity, especially in the private sector. So there's every reason to believe that if South Africa continues to do the right things and do them continuously over a long period of time, our competitiveness should improve and we should see greater investment in South Africa and consequently economic growth and job creation.
Are there any tensions lingering around the AGOA agreement? We know that the US Congress, from their perspective, there's been rumblings, there's been different perspectives around South Africa being removed from the AGOA agreement and how that will impact our business. Is anything being said at the moment around that? And is that a conversation that is still very much in the minds of the investment community in the US?
No, not at all. I mean, the investors whom we met with, as well as policymakers within the U.S. Administration, they've been focusing more on specific issues. What's happening to the electricity situation? What are the plans to expand the transmission network? When will project be ready? It is those kind of conversations that people are focusing on, things that will give them tangible signals to then enable them to make investment decisions. I think whilst AGOA and some of the issues that have been raised by some members of the U.S. Congress are definitely things to keep in mind. But in the investment community, those sort of conversation and issues do not feature prominently at all. People are looking more for structural reforms and things that would make South Africa a far more attractive investment destination. And that's what the conversations are centering on.
With day one out of the way and kind of key discussions having been started or initiated at this point, what lies ahead for day two of the conference, and are there next steps sort of being outlined from whether it's an investor point of view or whether it's a South African point of view around how we take conversations forward beyond just having conversations?
Yeah, day one is really about more showcasing what the country has done, what the opportunities are, the improvements that have been made on a number of fronts that were raised as obstacles in the past. So it's more plenary workshop type sessions. Tomorrow is one-on-one meetings where companies now meet individually with investors. And that's where real progress gets generated, because either investors would like the story that they hear from a specific company and will increase their shareholding, or will begin processes internally to look at further investment opportunities in South Africa. These things, by their nature, they don't happen overnight. But a conference of this nature can lay a very firm foundation upon which individual companies and investors can follow up and start to pursue specific then opportunities.
Speaking of those opportunities,
and I'm confident that given you.
Speaking of those opportunities,
no, go ahead.
Dr. Fiedler, before I let you go, I want to touch on kind of how the opportunities are being set up. I mean, you're chairing a session around the optimal energy mix. We've spoken about the energy conversation in South Africa. Are there other sort of key areas that might be of interest to investors to say, this is kind of where we want to get involved in? I mean, we know the likes of South African Airways domestically are looking at getting in equity investments and equity partners. Is there are specific companies there looking a little more attractive per se to investors, just given where they operate in terms of South African sectors?
I think the broader infrastructure space is very attractive, given the amount of investment that's required, the expertise that many of the international companies bring to bear, and the impact that that will have on the South African economy. So over and above energy and energy transition, the broader infrastructure space is attractive to investors, and in particular, logistics, i.e., what can be done in the rail sector, in the harbor space, and so on. The other area of interest to sort of investors is just the maturity of the manufacturing sector in South Africa and how that can be leveraged to create bases that can give them access to the broader African market. We've seen in the past inquiries around some of our food processing companies, i.e. your fast-moving consumer goods manufacturers, the retail sector. There's a huge interest in the telco space, and in particular around data services and cloud services. It is not surprising that we have seen investment by some of the major sort of IT companies in the development of cloud services in South Africa, all using South Africa as a base to service, if you like, Africa and probably the southern.
Well, as Africa's most...
We will continue to grow and diversify, yeah.
We certainly will continue to grow as South Africa's most industrialized and developed economy up to this point. We want to continue to be attractive to foreign investors. Thank you so much, Kenny, for those insights. That's Kenny Fietler, who is the Deputy Chief Executive at the Standard Bank Group on the SA Tomorrow Conference. It's currently taking place in New York.
As your family tree grows, so should your investments. From creating a safety net for your family to planning for grandchildren, we have the investment solution for you. 91, investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA here on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with Ketso Gordon, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the South African SME Fund. Among the topics of conversation, why small businesses need to be paid in 30 days, the art of blended financing, and why scalability is not necessarily important in small businesses.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
On Friday, we got an update from Dis-Chem around their performance for the first half of the year. Now, obviously, because we didn't have a show on Friday, it would have been very difficult to catch up with the company and get a sense of how the company is performing. But we are joined on the line now, thankfully, by the company's CEO, Rui Morais, to take a look at the business and try and make sense of how the company has been performing. Good evening, Rui. Thanks so much for taking the time. Interesting kind of start to the new financial year. Things looking okay. Very good growth in revenue numbers, almost 10% there. How do you reflect on that, Roy?
Evening. So sure. I mean, I think two fundamental highlights from our half year results. I think, as you said, a decent revenue performance. If you split it across our retail and wholesale business, we continue to take nice market share in the wholesale of products into the independent space. And then retail, even though, you know, the consumer is very value conscious, retail continued to do well. And then I think our performance was highlighted by the ability for us to contain costs. So especially employee costs, which we contain nicely, and that kind of all spat out in the bottom line and reflected into the earnings growth of close on 16.5%.
I saw that in the SENS announcement, and I wondered to myself, Roy, when we look at cost containment, especially on the employee cost side of it, how do you achieve that without massive layoffs, without losing jobs, while still protecting jobs and ensuring that the business continues to grow? Surely that's a difficult task.
It is. It is. I think we were fortunate in that we had an overinvested cost base in the past. So, you know, being an entrepreneurial business that was so focused on service, we almost had a decentralized decision-making process around how do you staff stores, and it became relatively inefficient. So, you know, when we started to centralize that and roll out frameworks that were store-specific and took into account the market and the size of the store, we actually had additional heads that we were able to redeploy into new space. So we required no layoffs, we required no reductions in salaries. Ultimately, we took our existing staffing base and we were able to deploy them over, you know, many more stores. And as a function of that, we were able to reduce costs and kind of get the positive leverage that resulted in the profitability growth.
Roy, when we look at the business, Dis-Chem has been, as you said, focusing on customers and focusing on the growth. Where have you seen kind of pressure points and pain points for customers, understanding that consumers have obviously had a lot to contend with and I can imagine things like healthcare, wellness, all of that is going to be impacted whether they want it to be or not.
Yeah, I mean, so we're fortunate that we play in the non-discretionary spend space. So I think we probably see it less than what discretionary retailers would see. But I mean, to your point, you know, when someone gets compromised or when there's value pressure on consumers, you know, it affects the entirety of their wallet. So, I mean, there's pressure points that we see across the entirety of the products that we sell. Obviously, on the commoditized lines, what we see is we see people searching for value. So commoditized lines in South Africa are almost always exclusively shopped on promotion now, which becomes very difficult for retailers, you know, because it's always promoted and it's very difficult to differentiate yourself from competition. But in the niche space, which is what makes us different in the dispensary space, you know, we see medical inflation, we see benefit reduction in medical schemes, and just more out of pocket spend, you know, which is effectively into healthcare, which is a basic human right. And I think that's also why we've kind of launched medical insurance. We believe there's a price point for private healthcare that's much lower than medical schemes. And that plays out into our health ecosystem that we're trying to build.
Oh, I was definitely not going to let you go without touching on the Dis-Chem Life offering. But since we are here now, Roy, go on. Tell us about this.
So sure. I mean, obviously, we're launching Life in the first quarter of calendar 25. I mean, we've had some questions around, you know, it's a very saturated market. You know, how do we see ourselves doing things differently? I think, I mean, if you look at the traditional life space, you have, you know, the normal players who sell products through financial advisors, through a financial advisory chain. You have newer players that have come into the life space, like a Capitec, that have been relatively disruptive and utilized their network. But I think when we've tested the concept of a financial services product that needs to sit in our ecosystem, you need to be able to look at it through a healthcare lens. And the way that we think about life is, you know, we have a set of services in our clinics and our pharmacies that ultimately exist to improve the healthcare of South Africans. And if we're able to do that, we inherently lower the risk, which allows us to reduce premiums in the life space. So simply speaking, we understand the health risk associated with our customers. In the chronic space, we understand if they're adherent to their medication, and we're able to personalize price points around premiums. And I think in doing that and then encouraging the utilization of our services, we do have a very differentiated offering as we enter the life market.
Roy, how are you aligning this with NHI? Understanding that the bill has been signed, we are kind of moving ahead with that at whatever pace we might be moving at. How has that influenced your alignment of your life offering and looking at what your footprint looks like?
Sure. So I think when you think about NHI, I mean, the consequence of NHI is right. I mean, like universal healthcare is right. I think there's a couple of points that I would make personally, and I think the private sector reflects some of these sentiments. The first is that collaboration between the state and the private sector is required. I mean, if we think back, the only time where collaboration was forced on us, and I use force, you know, in its appropriateness, was when we went through the pandemic. I mean, we had to collaborate and we worked together, and we worked well together in terms of the country's reaction to something that, you know, caught everyone unaware. And I think as we think about NHI, it's important to understand that the private sector has capacity, hospitals, pharmacy, clinics that is underutilized. The state has got capacity that is overutilized, and the redistribution of people across that capacity is probably the most efficient way to deal with healthcare. So collaboration is an important thing. And then I think fundamentally the way that the funding gets administrated requires private sector participation. You know, delivering healthcare is very complex. Routing people through the healthcare supply chain, you know, especially when it starts at primary care level, and, you know, the most effective delivery of healthcare is to catch, you know, any sort of consequences at the primary healthcare level because it's the cheapest form of treating it. Like, that is complicated, and the private sector has solved for that before, and the collaboration is required in the administrative space and in the services space. So I think the bill ultimately, as it will be contested, it needs to form and regulate in that way, because I think that ultimately is the best way for all South Africans to experience what is, you know, an important concept of universal healthcare.
It's best to learn from each other. We can always get it right if we learn from each other. Roy, before I let you go, what's the next kind of 6 months looking like for Dis-Chem? Are you optimistic? Are you concerned about anything? Are you overly positive? How are you feeling?
So I think the challenge remains. I think regardless of the two-pot system that has been spoken about, reducing interest rates, I think like structurally the consumer remains constrained, even though there might be some temporary relief. So the way that I think about the group and the way that we as a group are being positioned is ultimately you need to be able to create value for a consumer. And that value needs to be created sustainably. You know, once you have that, then you do have something that potentially differentiates you, and you will get the foot traffic that is a South African consumer, which makes, you know, any retailer successful. So, you know, simplistically, you know, that's how we're thinking about the next 6 months and even longer term.
Focus on creating value for consumers. The rest will sort itself out. We'll leave it at that, Roy. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Roy Murray, CEO at Dis-Chem, on their first half of the year and what the second half could potentially look like.
There's a song that goes, money can't buy me love. And that's true. But then they told us, all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you, most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love, with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Pick and Pay Stores Limited gave us their interim results for the 26 weeks ended the 25th of August. Effectively, their interim results, their half-year results for the first half of their financial year of 2025. I have the privilege of speaking to the company's Group CEO, Sean Summers, around how the business is performing and what it means for the business going forward. Good evening, Uncle Sean. Lovely to speak to you again. When we caught up the last time, we understood that there were challenging times ahead, and the trading statement that we got around May or so confirmed that. Where do we stand now? How's the first half of the year been playing out?
Thank you, Jimmy, and good afternoon. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Obviously, we announced these results where we saw a widening in the loss, which is distressing in one degree. But on the other, it was predicted and forecast. When I came back a year ago, my instinct told me that things would get worse before they got better. And that has turned out to be so. And I think these results are a manifestation of that. The positive in this is that I can fairly comfortably say that the worst is behind us. We've had one hell of a year without wanting to talk too much about the detail because we have limited time. But let me just say that this has been the fastest, longest year that I've had, certainly in my career. But we've stepped through many, many, many hoops this year. We've jumped over many hurdles. And from the start of the year, if you have a look, when we first breached our covenants and maxed out our facilities, we had a very complicated lender group, 11 banks that we had to deal with, and rewriting and restructuring all of those lender agreements, which was a complex issue to have to deal with. And at the same time, then line ourselves up for the rights offer and dealing with all of the complexities around that. That was fantastically supported, 104% oversubscribed, while at the same time getting ourselves prepared for the Boxer IPO, which we are ready to go with, and hopefully market conditions prevailing. That will be concluded by the end of this calendar year. And so from that perspective, this year has been, on the one hand, very, very much focused on remedying the challenges around the balance sheet. And then on the other side, we've also had to deal with the underlying operations of the Pick and Pay piece of the business. So clothing and Boxer and value-added services have continued to perform very, very well. But the elephant in the room is the core Pick and Pay business. And it's like a fire. You know, in life, when you put out a fire, you put it out 100%, not 99%. So that's why we've really been focused on the Pick and Pay piece of the business this year. And that's where our attention will remain going forward into next year. Once the balance sheet is remedied, we will then have the resources to be able to start to deploy that into our core estate that we have, to start reinvesting in some of our key trading stores that we have, We still have wonderful geographies and trading stores, but those stores are underinvested. So we will get cracking on that score and continue to show the positive trajectory that we are showing.
Uncle Sean, when we last spoke in May, you and I discussed the back-to-basics strategy that you'd kind of put in place. This is a lot of that strategy around cleaning up before starting to move forward. How is that coming along? Are there areas where you are hitting some roadblocks that you might not have expected? Or are there areas that are turning around surprisingly quicker than you thought?
You know, I've been pleasantly surprised on a few dimensions. First of all, by the people in the company. You know, Pick n Pay has always been an extraordinary business, and we have such remarkable people in this business. I've brought back a handful, maybe 8 or 10 in total, of people who had unfortunately left Pick n Pay that shouldn't have left us. So they've come back, so we've certainly brought back some skills that were missing. But I've just been really so pleasantly surprised at how across the length and breadth of the company the Pick n Pay people have risen to the challenge. And as I've always believed, you know, leadership in life is simple. It's getting the ordinary to achieve the extraordinary, because there's no end to what you can achieve at the end of the day. We all get dressed the same way, one leg at a time in the morning, doesn't matter who you are. And if you give people the right environment to thrive and you give them self-belief, it's incredible what people can achieve. So that's been absolutely phenomenal. And notwithstanding the fact that it's a very competitive market out there, we can see the rate at which our competitors have been opening new stores against a backdrop where we've in fact been closing some stores. And notwithstanding that, we've been able to turn the delta around from a solid negative like-on-like into strong positive like-on-likes. And I think if ever there's been a manifestation of the fact that we are getting traction in what we are doing, it's that simple fact.
Something else that's providing a bit of comfort or reassurance around the traction, having a look at something like the trading profit, is that despite the fact that margins were squeezed in these last 26 weeks as compared to the 26 weeks of 2024, the trading profit improved significantly. How much of that is due to the changes that have been put in place, and how much of that can be attributed to that elephant in the room being the Pick n Pay business?
It can absolutely be attributed to that, and we will be seeking to make more changes in that trajectory. One of the things that we have done on the margin front, and one of the things that's suppressed our margin, is that we took a decision first up that we needed to remedy the pricing of Pick n Pay and get Pick n Pay competitive. You know, you can't play golf without a golf ball at the end of the day, and if you're not competitive, you've got no chance. So we said, well, we're going to deal with that in the first instance, and then we'll sort out how we remedy the margin shortfalls in some of those areas, which is the work that we are currently busy with. I mean, there's so many elements, Jimmy. I mean, if I gave you a list of all of the initiatives we're currently busy with in the organization, it would make your head spin. But it's what we do, and it's what we are doing.
Uncle Sean, let's touch on that unbundling. We kind of have the step one done of the turnaround strategy. That was the rights offer that went off without a hitch, as you mentioned at the start of our conversation. Uh-huh. The unbundling now of Boxer, the Boxer IPO, possibly, potentially going to be the biggest IPO we've seen on the continent. How is that coming along? Is everything going according to plan for that? And are preparations for that listing going as they should?
Yes, they all in place. We've just published our intention to list. The PLS has gone out, a very comprehensive document. So all of that is proceeding apace. There's a whole process that one needs to follow in an IPO, and we're ready to go. The market conditions remain favorable currently, and we're quietly confident that we will get that done by the end of the year.
That does look optimistic for the end of the year. Before I let you go, Uncle Sean, what do we look forward to in the second half of the year? Obviously, there are still challenges that persist, and I don't think that looking at things like a dividend payout at this stage makes a lot of sense, understanding that there's a recapitalization plan in place and there's a whole turnaround strategy. But what's to look forward to going into H2 for the Pick n Pay business, and how are you seeing that core Pick n Pay business shaping up once that unbundling kind of takes place?
You see, Jimmy, you're rewriting retail history here, because there used to be an uncle in the furniture business in the old days, Joshua Dorr. Now you're saying you've got an uncle in the grocery business in Pick and Pay. So what we're looking to do in the second half of this year, and we indicated this morning, is that we will be looking to halve the losses that we made in the second half. I'm talking at a core Pick and Pay retail level, which I think will be a really positive, firm step in the right direction. And simultaneously, while doing that, to continue to build in the work that we have already started in the company of making sure that we win the hearts and minds of the people that work in the company to begin with, operationally at the store level. The most important thing for me is how Pick and Pay customers feel about the company when they leave our stores having been there. And that's where our focus will remain.
Well, there are other announcements to look forward to, like that announcement that was teased in the presser a little earlier on today around a big partnership from the Pick and Pay and F&B families that's coming out. We'll keep an eye on that. It's set to drop later this week. We'll see how that announcement is set to impact the business going forward. For now, we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much, Uncle Sean, for the time and for the insights. Sean Summers, Group CEO at Pick and Pay, joining us to reflect on their interim numbers and try and make sense of their performance.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Ready to take control of your financial future? Moneyversity Plus is your go-to streaming edutainment platform for all ages. With fun, engaging content and downloads for kids ages 6 to 17 and practical lessons for adults of all ages, Moneyversity Plus makes learning about money easy and exciting for everyone in the family. Plus, as you learn, you can earn Old Mutual Rewards points, a win for your wallet and a win for your future. Whether it's mastering money basics or planning your financial goals, Moneyversity has you covered. Start streaming today and join thousands of others at moneyversity.co.za. Your plus one for financial wisdom.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's once again time for personal finance on a Monday, and this week we're taking a look at the credit card conversation. We often look at that as a means to try and get certain things done, but we're going to take a look and see if we can make credit cards useful in our everyday lives. I'm joined on the line by Dan Sherman, who is the QC and Compliance Manager at National Debt Advisors, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of it. Dan, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. When we think about the world that we live in, and I saw this statistic that suggests that 87% of consumers in South Africa, according to a recent survey, consider themselves financially stretched. That's a shocking and alarming number in itself, but it also speaks to the fact that financial pressures and the cost of living in South Africa are things that consumers have to contend with every single day.
Definitely, definitely. So it's actually a very interesting concept. As we see the cost of living increase, we also see a heavier reliance on credit cards, because credit cards are generally used to service day-to-day expenses. The rise in the cost of living results in that increased usage and reliance. And if one isn't disciplined enough, you can easily overspend on your credit card, which could leave you in quite a bit of trouble.
Dion, I want to look at how these pressures and this reliance on credit cards for kind of everyday expenses, whether we know it or not, kind of builds up somewhat of a dependency that we have, and what are some of the factors that drive that dependency?
So it all depends on the consumer and why they've taken out their credit card. Like I said, credit cards are used for your day-to-day expenses, right? So the minute that your day-to-day expenses increase, the spending increases. The trick here is to create a budget and ensure that your spending remains within your budget. Credit cards are meant to be used in order to build your credit record, to build your credit score, and to create a healthy credit score. However, if you start overspending on your credit card, it can easily lead you to become
overburdened and start defaulting on those credit card payments. So that increasing dependency may result in a society that's overburdened with debt, and this often goes hand in hand with increased credit card defaults, as seen in 2023, where we had Woolworths Financial Services, Nedbank, and Standard Bank all reporting increased credit impairment rates.
Dion, when we look at the control aspects of the credit cards, before we look at kind of some of the easy tips and tricks to managing this better, what do we do if we're in that situation? I've taken on too much credit card debt, or I haven't intended to, and it's now gotten out of control. How do we regain that control? What are some of the easy things to start off by saying, let's tackle these problems first? And obviously understanding that I could have more than one credit card.
Definitely, definitely. So you'll have to look at your spending rate, and you'll have to start cutting down on your spending rate on that credit card. So let's say, for example, you spend an average of 5,000 Rand a month on your credit card. That increases to 6,000. Now you're going to have to start spending 4,000 Rand so that you start slowly but surely paying off that excess debt that you've now accumulated. We also have to keep in mind, look, credit cards are designed in such a way that there's usually a period that you have interest-free. Most credit cards in South Africa have a 55-day interest-free credit policy on it. So which means that if you settle your credit card within 55 days, they won't charge you any interest. And the goal here is to settle it before it charges interest. And that way, you're building a good credit score without actually getting into any debt.
That's quite an interesting point that you bring up there, Dion, around just managing the credit profile a little bit better. But I find that it's often a little harder to do when you're already in the situation and you're already kind of into a lot of credit utilization and all of that. How do you navigate those aspects of it, understanding that it might be difficult to cut down on expenses, but there are other things that you could potentially do around just utilizing your credit card better, utilizing your credit limits better, not maxing out the card every time? What are some of those useful tips and tricks that you can put in place?
So my first tip would be to shop smart. Look around and look at the different options, the different credit card options that are available before you even decide to take out a credit card. Because different credit cards will have different rewards linked to them. They'll also have different credit policies, like I previously mentioned. So you have to look at all those different factors in order to decide whether or not a credit card is needed and which credit card is best for what you want to use it for. Then once you have that credit card, ensure you make those timely payments to avoid interest being charged. So like I mentioned, 55 days, more or less, most credit cards have that interest-free policy. So make sure that you're making those timely payments. Manage your credit utilization. So aim to use no more than about 30% of your credit limit to maintain that good credit score while not overspending on your credit card. And make sure you use your credit card. Don't keep the balance at zero. You have to manage your spending, because the point of the credit card is to build up a credit score and to build up a good credit rating. So you're not going to get that credit rating if you're not actually using credit. And finally, think twice before canceling. You know, your first credit card, especially if it's the older one, it can impact your credit history and the average account age, and it could even potentially harm your credit score. So think twice about canceling your credit cards unless it's absolutely necessary, and make sure that you have at least the oldest one active so that it can continue building that credit score. And if push comes to shove, if you're really drowning in debt, don't hesitate to seek assistance from experts like National Debt Advisors. You know, we have the knowledge and the tools to help you navigate your financial challenges.
Dion, before I let you go, I want to take a look at some of the positives. I want to look at some of the benefits that having good credit plan and a good credit structure can do for your finances going forward. I mean, obviously understanding that it requires an immense amount of discipline to be able to achieve this. What are some of the upsides? You touched on something about rewards programs earlier, but what are some of the other upsides to having a proper structure in place for your credit card and for your credit management in general?
Well, the positives here is the main goal to build a really good credit score. That really good credit score is going to help you down the line, especially when you need to start taking out a bond or vehicle finance, as we often do. Those are the unavoidable debts that we have to consider, because very rarely do people have cash on hand to buy a car or to buy a house cash. So the unavoidable debts require you to have a good credit score. And the better your credit score, the more likely it is for you to be approved for those debts and also to benefit from preferential interest rates. So depending on the banks that you're banking with, you might even get preferential interest rates because you use credit cards from that same bank and you might even bank with that same bank. So those are the upsides. And then, of course, if push comes to shove, if you're going through an emergency and you need cash quickly, you don't have to stress about being declined because you have a good credit score. So you'll find, you know, a credit provider that will be willing to give you that loan, provided that you obviously pay it back. So having a good credit score is a good safety net, as well as a good way to build that financial future that you're looking for. Specifically, like I said, those unavoidable debts like your bonds and your cars.
There are some unique advantages to having a credit score that looks attractive towards the banks looking to finance and lend money to you. Be sure to consult your financial advisor on anything that you are unsure of. They are there to help you. If you need to consult the National Debt Advisors, they are there to assist as well. Thanks so much, Dion, for the insights and for the time. Dion Sherman, who is QC and Compliance Manager at National Debt Advisors, on using your credit card to build a positive environment. And with that, we've come to the end of our show. It's coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Hose is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.